Hey guys, popping in with a reminder to sign up for the GovHub newsletter. This weekly pop of politics is designed to share action items, resources, and quick links to civic engagement tools and topics directly to your inbox. Save it, share it, and sign up for a pinch of productive politics today by going to girlonthegov.com or visiting this episode's description.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Girl on the Gov, the podcast,
where our goal is to make politics more accessible and less intimidating.
The show features an interview with an expert in the political field, walking us through the many cues we have about politics, civics, government, and more.
By providing civic education in the places we are, on our phones, and in the language we speak. And yes, we know we say like a lot.
It's kind of the point, because politics needed a rebrand. Welcome back to Girl on the Gov, the podcast. Happy Wednesday. Also, another thing I want to talk about was this is today Brian Derrick's podcast launches, which I'm so excited to listen
Love.
To. I think it's called Vibes, and everyone should go listen because the man's a genius. He's what, triple guests on the show? Double?
No, he's triple. Absolutely a double, but he might be a triple. If he's okay. A triple, he's our only triple of all time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which then you know. You know you have hit gold medal levels of achievement. If you've been a triple guest and Girl on the Gov, the podcast,
period.
The world is your oyster.
Yes. Well, also, we need to talk about the Golden Globes because there was just tea everywhere. And honestly, like, the Golden Globes is never exciting, I feel like. And it hasn't been for years. And it was not only star-studded, but kind of tea-filled.
No, literally, I'm not an award show girly at all. Like, when I was, like, a wee little thing, I was into the red carpet of different ones because I, like, love the fashion. But, like, I literally, even the other night, I texted my friend. So I was like, is this acting or singing? Like, because I wasn't watching. I just was, like, seeing the fashion, start to come on, like, IG or whatever. Couldn't tell you.
I don't understand the difference between Golden Globes, Oscars, and Emmys because those are all, like, TV movies. I think one of them's, like, more TV than movies, maybe the Emmys. But I love the Grammys because I just love all the performances and the music. But all of the, like, TV movie ones, I just haven't watched, I feel like, in years. But and I honestly didn't even watch the Golden Globes the other night. But I'm just seeing.
No.
I was seeing the clips
I think that's, like,
stories.
The era we're in now is, like, so much of, like, how we watch things is in, like, clips. And, like, we tune in after the fact in a lot of ways of, oh, my God, did you see that happen? But if nothing was dramatic, we're passing it by for better or for worse. But this, I swear to God, this is the year of the man that no one knows. And, like, almost like platforming the nameless man in a sense. We started this year off with Simone Biles' husband, okay? I still don't know his name and I don't plan on ever knowing his name, okay? Riding the coattail of literally, I don't know, the most iconic accomplished gymnast of all time. So that's thing one. And now here, the Golden Globes, we have some comedian I've never heard of, like, we'll just call him Washed Up Jack. Like, I don't even know. Coming out with, like, the worst jokes of all time. And not only were they just not funny, but, like, they could not have proven the point of why we needed the Barbie movie in the first place.
Yeah. Well, this man is Joe Coy. And he is, how I know him is that he used to date Chelsea Handler.
So that's also because of a woman and her accomplishments.
Well, you know, some would say. But again, it's also just interesting back to the clipping part of it all of, like, we also, when you watch through clips, you have to also realize you're not getting the context of the whole show, or, like, you're not getting his entire monologue. I didn't watch his entire monologue, but I just saw the really bad jokes, and the Barbie ones specifically are the ones that just absolutely killed me in a bad way. And this meme, I pulled it up because I just, like, was so accurate. And it was like, woman makes a record obliterating film about how impossible it is to be a woman. Man with microphone. Big boobies. Ha ha. Like, what? And there's so many funny jokes he honestly could have made along those lines of like where he brought in the message of the movie and then kind of like made fun of men and their reaction to Barbie being like, oh, big boobies. Totally. Like if he was mocking the men who probably did react that way, like, but the way he just looked like one of those stupid guys that like cannot fucking think outside of his bubble.
Well, I saw this interview with him, like a clip of this interview. I can't remember what news program this was, but it was so clear that he didn't get why the joke didn't land. Like it was so over his head. And I was like, this is the problem. Like you are an exhibit A of it. But I did see a lot of commentary on TikTok. This is obviously continuing to just not spiral, but roll on as a conversation topic of like sort of like where we are in this universe. And so much of it is like, you know what? A few years ago, these jokes would have either landed or would have just everyone kept going on their merry way. And now like the temperature on the room has definitely changed and is continuing to change, because if you looked around the room at the reactions of people to those jokes, it was like cringe freaking nation. Mm-hmm. And that's a difference. Like that really, it's like the little things. Obviously, we have so, so far to go because the joke's still being made and he's still being platformed. And I mean, for God's sake, we're still in a country where in how many of our states are reproductive rights are being taken away. So like, again, we're taking steps forward and steps back all at the same time. It's like such a weird.
Yeah, it's just also shout out to Ryan Gosling too for being the man in the room who like literally the camera pans to him and he's just like, no, fuck you, dude. Like just also just this is another meme, literally the same message, but it just also hits. It was like Greta Gerwig goes to truly unthinkable lengths to create a film that explains the basic principles of feminism in the most accessible way possible. Average man. Barbie is based on a plastic doll with big boobies. And it's true. Like I think the people who also like don't get Barbie and didn't like it, like that's fine. It's also kind of like it's a different movie. Like it is kind of like cheesy and corny in a way, but it's kind of that place to like the genius of Greta Gerwig being like, no, I'm literally trying to like make this so easy for people to understand by like literally using Barbies to explain feminism to you and you just like still can't get it. Okay.
Totally. No, there is this TikTok audio that I'm putting in viral for today that is exactly that, where you have one of those situations where you explain something so simply, like A plus B equals C, and the person still goes, I don't get it. And that is the situation with quite a few people, specifically men. So it's interesting, but I think this movie will be studied for decades and decades to come and be like such an interesting pinnacle of things. So I just think it deserves all the awards. And I've never even seen it, I will even say. And it's not because like I have an issue with it. It's because I have ADHD and girls. And
it's a long movie.
And they, you know, I can't sit through that. You know, I can't. And I do think if I'm going to be critical, the marketing team overexposed the movie to a point where I was like, I can't. So I just was like, I've seen the movie without ever seeing the movie, if that makes any sense. But I totally support its values and all of those things.
The movie brought back the movies. I haven't been to a movie in years, mostly because I'm afraid, even though I'll like go to a festival and concerts, of getting shot. But I went. I went this summer because of the marketing, because of like the community, the camaraderie that it created. And it actually was really life-changing for me to like go into movie theater. The smells, the like cheesy 80s carpet, like everything was so nostalgic. And I was like very glad I went. So shout out to Barbie for that.
Okay. A, love. B, you know what it is about, I think, movie theaters versus concerts. It's like in a movie theater, like you can't run. Like there's nowhere to go.
Yeah,
like,
you're
really
hard
to get out of a movie theater. Totally. Whereas like at a concert, we don't do math here. So I don't know what the odds are, but it feels like you're not trapped. Unless you're in like a really congested spot, which is why I will like never be in a pit. But the fact that we even have to think about these things, like we 4 days into the new year, we already started off with a school shooting, like a mass shooting. So insane. So,
yes.
Okay. I have something happy though.
Okay.
Something like I'm dying at. So obviously you guys know that we are Paige DeSorbo stands on this podcast. Like, mm-hmm. that's pretty much the premise of this pod. Like, who are we kidding? And anyways, I guess she went on Craig's pod and we're talking about like what like the Christmas presents were, like what the exchange was. And turns out at the Cincinnati Zoo, so I happen to know about this hippo because I love hippos. It's the whole thing. There is literally this little like baby hippo named Fritz and he's so freaking cute. Go find him on TikTok, guys. You will not regret it. Anyways, you can go and brush the hippo's teeth. Like you can like, you get like a big toothbrush. And so he got her literally like a flight to like Cincinnati, Ohio. So random to go brush Fritz's teeth. And I just, that's if anyone's
pretty
listening.
Pretty amazing. She needs to marry him tomorrow.
No, literally. I'm like, this is the most perfect gift of all time. Like obsessed.
I saw that and I was like, it was hilarious because I didn't know. I don't know about Fritz. And I especially, yeah, when they said, when he like were unraveling what the gift was, like the Cincinnati, Ohio, and then the zoo, and then the hippo, I was like, oh, like, cute. And then just the niche, like, randomness of like the act of brushing its teeth, I was like, what? But it's amazing. I'm obsessed. Definitely brought joy.
Ugh, such pure joy. Also, if anyone wants to sponsor us to go to Cincinnati to go brush Fritz's teeth, please feel free to sign to DMs.
I would love that.
Yeah, basically, this is what our dream trips of 2024 look like. Going to Cincinnati to brush Fritz's teeth, Mississippi and West Virginia. So call us interesting.
Yeah, definitely. Also, just before we get into this episode, just have to bring up the kind of iconic January 6th speech. Was it in his speech or was it in a press conference, Biden? Biden basically almost called Trump a sick fuck. And I couldn't tell if it was intentional or not because he kind of had like a comedic pause after. Like he knew the crowd was going to like start laughing. So I couldn't tell if it was like intentional because Biden loves to crack jokes. I didn't know if it was that or if it was like he just almost literally called Trump a sick fuck.
But he is a funny guy. I think that's an underrated trait about him. Like 100%. People don't give him enough credit. Like I think also, you know how like there's that classic trope of like the older you get, the less fucks you give. And like there's a classic older you just saying those out of pocket things.
I totally agree. I love his personality, honestly. And yeah, makes him a little old age, not giving a fuck. And maybe a few gaffes here and there. He's human. Give him a fucking break. Okay, well, that is enough rambling for today. We need to get into this episode. And our guest, Samantha, to the honors.
I can't believe we actually did get further into this in the intro. Guys, this episode has our very first Republican. Like, literally.
Like, what?
Crazy, crazy, crazy. Okay, so let's, like, build the storyline here. So there's this organization, Future Caucus, which we absolutely love, and they do such cool work. You might have seen my latest little DC trip. I was able to go for their Rising Star Awards. And what they do is they bring legislators from both sides of the aisle, state level, federal level, and bring them together to talk about issues that they can work on together. They create sort of like a slate of issues, and they genuinely, they problem solve and come together and talk about issues. There's 33 states with a Future Caucus, meaning like a group of bipartisan legislators that are working together to figure shit out and actually get shit done. And they literally are. The focus is also young legislators too. So it's like building up this group of people that can work together, work across the aisle. And this crew is the Vermont Future Caucus. So the two leaders of that. So we talked to them about how they work together, what that looks like, the importance of bipartisanship. I mean, you guys might remember we used to have the bipartisan bell, which we haven't rung in a while. We may have to get back to that.
Yeah. This whole episode is the bipartisan bell happening right in front of our eyes and our ears.
No, it literally is. This episode is with Rep. Casey Toof and Rep. Mary Catherine Stone. We are getting the fuck into bipartisanship.
Who also literally got engaged on the House or the balcony, which she explains the full story in this episode, but literally came into this episode being like, oh, by the way, I just got engaged in our House chamber. So tune in for that story. It's also
literally
included.
And she DM'd us and was like, wait, on the list for your civically engaged sweatshirt. It's so perfect for her. So we might do, just FYI, a new merch launch in the coming months. So stay tuned for that. So anyways, without further ado. Here is the Vermont Future Caucus, Rep Stone and Rep Toof.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
All right, guys, we are so excited to have you. Also, so good to see you again post Rising Star Awards Future Caucus, which for everyone listening, we will get into what that is and all of that tea. But we have two Vermont reps here that work as a part of a coalition under the Future Caucus, and we have to get into what that is. So if one of you, I'm going to let you guys sort of flip a coin. Who wants to take this first question of what is Future Caucus and how do you guys work together across the aisle?
So the Vermont Future Caucus, we're a coalition of legislators under 45. We're actually tripartisan here in the state of Vermont. So we have the Progressive Party is actually a third major party. So we do have representation in all three parties. And we started about a year ago, we had our kickoff. We started, a year and a half ago, but we started the session last January, and that's when we really got our kickoff. So we've been at it for about a year and a half. And we are working on, we'll get to what kind of our goals are.
You're working together is the main thing.
Yeah.
And on legislation to help all Vermonters, but particularly legislation that impacts younger Vermonters like us.
Amazing. Well, what was kind of the inspiration behind the bipartisanship of it all? I mean, I'm sure we all are on the same page of why that's so important, but was there a certain dynamic within, where you guys were working that it was just like, okay, this needs to happen. There needs to be across the aisle collaboration. Like, was there a specific catalyst or a moment where you're like, we need to do this like now?
Yeah, I can go. Just personally, when I'm not in the legislature, we're a part-time legislature. So we're here for 5 months and then we return to our respective homes for the rest of the year. I work as an occupational therapist, which is a frontline healthcare worker. And when I'm working in the hospital and treating a patient, I can't just go in and take complete ownership of the patient and say, well, it's my way or the highway. This is my treatment plan, my diagnosis, because then it wouldn't be providing the best care and it would actually like impede care to the patient. So when I came into the world of politics last year, it was my first time running new legislature, second year, my first session here. But I was like, of course, why are we not going to work together? We have really pressing issues that are impacting Vermonters like us right here and right now. We don't have time to muddy the waters. We must and have to work together. So that's just the way I'm wired. And I'm glad that the Future Caucus is here to support that way of thinking.
And there's a lot of, there's politics. We're politicians and that's what happens. And so when I think about the people I represent people of every political party. And when I'm in my hometown, I represent Republicans, Democrats, Progressive, Independent, Libertarian, basically anything on the political spectrum. So it's really good to have a place to come where we can work together and kind of just give our ideas. Not everything we agree on. So we just move on and do whatever we can do.
But we still listen to one another. And that's what matters most.
Totally. And I feel like listening is a huge part of bringing the temperature down in a room of like, even just acknowledging what the other has to say, even if you don't agree at all whatsoever. And you're like, what did they just say? You know, sort of figuring out what that reaction is. And I'm curious through Future Caucus, what those sort of strategies have been to bring the temperature down in the room enough to have those conversations or to know like, hey, okay, let's walk away from this one, but let's sort of, you know, move over to another issue. What does that look like?
One of the things that we did, we actually went to Future Summit in Indianapolis, and there was five of us that went from Vermont. We were pretty well represented. And when we were there, we actually were able to kind of open up a little bit more and talk to each other, you know, like a friendship level more of than a political opposition, you know. So we were able to actually break down and talk to each other and say, this is how I really feel about this issue. Instead of a debate on the floor or a debate in committee, we kind of introduced ourselves to more of a personal level. And I think that was something that was really beneficial for us. And we're trying to get more people to go next year.
Yeah,
because I think that was one of the biggest things that was able to allow us to work together.
And then bringing that sentiment home, that's what makes Future Caucus so important, is it gives us designated time and space to have those conversations. And we may walk away still disagreeing with each other, but at least we've had that time to intentionally listen and understand another person's perspective. And you don't always get that when you're on the floor because things move so quickly and you go in there and you already have your arguments lined up, like you're prepared for battle. Having the Future Caucus is a place to slow down and be able to have that human connection with someone else who may differ in their opinions from you is crucial. And I'm very thankful that we have that.
Yeah.
100%. Well, there's also this kind of generational aspect to Future Caucus, how they kind of zero in on these younger legislators like yourself. Can you explain why that's so important and why that's such a crucial element to this work as well?
You want to go too?
No, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm one of the representatives of Burlington, Vermont. I'm the junior representative. And the particular district I represent includes University of Vermont and Champlain College. So two universities. So when I come into the state house, like my constituents are at the forefront of my mind, and a lot of my constituents are younger Vermonters. And so, yeah, I mean, and I'm a younger Vermonter myself, but it's also like the people I represent are some of our younger generation. So, yeah.
And I have two children, they're 8 and 7. And that's, for me, it's like building a future for them, as well as me and my neighbors. Most of my neighbors are around the same age as me. And so I get a lot of the feedback from what is really important to our generation, but then looking at our future generations. So my two kids growing up and what's best for them, and also be like teaching them how to have a conversation in the political spectrum without it being so divisive and being able to listen to other people.
Yeah,
totally. Which I think in the last few years, if not like a little bit longer than that, the conversation that we have conversations has gone out the door, wazoo, crazy. And like, even when we started Girl on the Gov, one of the things was about bringing the temperature down of like having conversations where we actually talk about issues in the background and, you know, being able to get to sort of the meat of it without screaming at people or screaming at each other. We're like, we don't want to be MSNBC or Fox News. We want to just like actually chill and have these conversations, make that so much more normal and bring that to young people and sort of try and model that. And so, especially, you know, having kids and all of that, thinking about modeling conversations for the future, what does that mean to you guys? Like, what is trying to be sort of that change agent? You know, what is that responsibility?
I mean, another reason that I ran for office is because I want to break down barriers to make it easier for young people to serve. I hold a lot of marginalized identities. I am young, queer, Arab American, a woman, like all of the things. And so there's not a lot of representation for folks like me currently. And that's the reason I ran. It's like, if you don't have a seat at the table, then you got to make one, even if it's pulling up a folding chair. And so when I knock on doors and I see other young women in particular who are like, oh my gosh, you're my representative. I would love to do that. How can I do that? I'm like, I'm going to pave a way, and I'm trying to break down doors and bust ceilings and all of the things in order to make it easier and more accessible for younger generations to come and take my place and serve in my position in years to come. So that's a huge part of that. That's when I said when my constituents at the forefront of my mind, that's like the whole thing. It's like, I'm already thinking about how can I pass the baton and open up this table.
Yeah. And it's really important. Like when I was first elected in 2018, I thought I was going to come down here with my fist up. I was going to fight everybody. And Vermont is a lot different than what you see on the news in, you know, DC, and I'm assuming other states. I came in and like, I was like, yeah, you know, I'm ready to fight. And they're like, how are your kids doing? You have really cool kids. What do they do for sports? What do they do for fun? I'm like, I don't hate you. And I'm supposed to. So like building those relationships with people allow you to have tough conversations, but allows you to have conversations where they listen to your voice. And if you just put your feet into the sand and you say, I'm sticking to this and I'm not going to move, you can't really work well with others. So it's all about like working well with others. And, you know, Future Caucus is really good for younger people to like Rep Stone said, getting more people involved, making it comfortable for them to come into a space that they might be intimidated by. Cause that does happen when I talk to people. They think that we're at some level. I'm like, we're at no level. We're just like regular people down here trying to do what's best for our constituents.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that makes me wonder too, just kind of like, what does this bipartisanship look like in practice? Like, what are some of the methods and such that you guys use to like really work together and have that be effective? I'm sure, again, like you said, I was going to ask a similar question about like Vermont versus, say, I'm sure another state is going to be a little bit of a different dynamic. But at least for you guys, like, what does that really look like? And especially maybe like in the process of creating legislation, like, is there a certain like process, like checklist or tangible kind of method that you guys run through that does make bipartisanship easier to achieve?
I mean, we just keep saying the same thing, but conversations are key. And I think really taking the time to carve out conversations about what is important to you, what is important to your constituents, what's impacting your family right now, and then figuring out like where our Venn diagrams overlap. And then, I mean, as far as Future Caucus goes, and then going from there to create legislation that we can both agree on that we know is going to like make it through the finish line. So for example, this year, our banner issue is criminal justice reform. Because that issue is impacting like every single person in the Future Caucus in some way, shape, or form. And it's something that we can all get behind. The experiences and the ideas that we bring are pretty different. Like the experiences and ideas that Casey has, he lives in Franklin County, which is a more rural area in Vermont, as compared to mine living in Burlington, which is the biggest city in Vermont, like very different. But criminal justice reform is something, as we went around the table and like talk, it's something that our Venn diagrams like common.
Yeah.
So it's conversations and then figuring out where we overlap.
Yeah. Cause we built, like you said, we built relationships with people so you can have, I use humor a lot just to get to know people. And so like we can use that. I'm a Republican in a state. There's only 37 of us out of 150.
And the governor.
And we get the governor.
Yeah.
But we
you're also the first Republican on our show. I'm pretty sure. Right?
Yeah. Mazel.
There we go.
Welcome.
Wow. That's, I don't know what to say to that. But we try to, because there's like obviously things we're not going to agree on. We know there are things that we don't agree on and we're never going to agree on. And
well, that's so we got pessimistic, but well, likely not well, going to agree on.
Well, yeah. So we had a conversation about a certain bill that we were in opposition and we listened to each other and I heard from the other side what it meant. Didn't really change my perspective on it, but it did make me think a little bit harder on how we can improve the bill. Mm-hmm. So it's like those kind of things where we can just break down barriers and just talk to each other.
And yeah. I'm also curious too, when those
signed, you know,
sorry,
I said, who knows? He may change his mind with more conversation. It gives me hope. It's better than just going in and like not having the opportunity to talk to someone. You're like, oh, they're going to vote no for this forever. It's like, well, I don't know. Come back to us next year. We may keep having conversations in case he may come around. He's talking about legislative pay. If you want to know. I know that's increasing.
Gotcha.
Okay. That's yeah.
Well, I was curious too. You mentioned earlier about when you do disagree, like what are the next steps in that situation? Like you said, sometimes you just kind of push things to the side. Do you table it? Do you like, let's come back to this another time, another session? Like, or do you maybe scrap stuff? Like what is the?
Yeah, I think we just table it and we're like, we're not going to get anywhere with that. Let's just move on where we can. We had a really good meeting with the Future Caucus and everyone talked about the bills that they had and we were talking about. And I think we came to the consensus of criminal justice reform just because that was something that we all were agreeing on. Cause it's really hard, even in a group of 22 or whatever we have, it's really hard to get everyone to agree. And it's even hard, like I'm in the Republican caucus, there's 37 of us, we don't agree on everything. And it's really hard. It's like herding cats with legislators because we all have our egos and we all have our agenda and we all have different constituents. So, you know, sometimes party label doesn't mean anything. It just, this is where I'm from. And this is
I have students and he has farmers. I mean, you know, not to oversimplify, but we're, very different.
Totally. And like, even thinking about the application of laws, like a state like Vermont, it's like how something's going to play out in a rural area versus a more urban or even suburban area. Totally different, and trying to think about like what those impacts are. So I'm curious, to that point, what do those conversations about impact about bills look like? Like, how do you guys determine like what is going to be the most fair across different landscapes? Because it really is so vast in Vermont, like one town.
Yeah.
And it is. And that's like one of the hoops that we're like learning as we go. Like I said, we're only a year really since our kickoff. And it's learning what the different legislators, and a lot of our legislators too,
are new
legislators that
I'm new.
We had how many in your class?
Like 36 or something. Yeah, it's like as many Republicans as there are new legislators.
The turnover was about half of our legislature went through last year. So there's a lot of new legislators. I'm not like an expert on everything. I've been here only, this is my sixth year and only my third term.
Wow.
But I'm one of the higher up from seniority standpoint here. So it's like learning people. I learned a lot my first year. I learned a lot my second year. I learned even more in my third. So like where we're growing as a caucus is like people understanding what people want and need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm curious too, for your tips and just like to honestly take from your guys' work to take into real life potentially. I mean, we live in such a divided nation these days, and people are experiencing partisanship and often toxic partisanship in their personal lives. And we're just kind of curious if you guys have, I guess, tips and tricks for talking with friends and family or coworkers or whomever about kind of more divisive political issues and how to find common ground.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in Alabama, you know, debutante culture, went to etiquette class, all that stuff. And what they teach you is that you don't talk about politics and religion at the dinner table. Mm-hmm. And I believe that for a large majority of my life, especially growing up, you know, as a Democrat, a young Democrat in rural Alabama, I was like, yeah, I probably don't need to be talking about politics. But you know what? Throw that out the window. I say, do talk about those things. Have those hard conversations with your family and your friends over the dinner table when you're in communion with one another. Because if not, like, it's not going to happen. And that division is just going to continue to grow. So again, saying the same thing over and over, but conversation is key. And like humanizing your opponent, the person across the dinner table, the person across the aisle, that's the first step. And I feel like that's not happening. We live in fear of the other and fear of talking to someone who has differing opinions.
And that's both sides. Like when I knock on doors, I get it from both sides. And it's what I found is I have two ears and one mouth and to use them accordingly. And so I try to listen as much as I can because I can be very outspoken and very opinionated, as Mary Catherine might tell you, I'm very opinionated and stubborn. But when you listen to people, you actually can start to learn where they're coming from, what their experiences are and why they feel that way. And then just validating what they're saying, that you heard them, and it helps you, like, people understand it. And it helps people come to you. When I have people in my town, they know that I might not agree with them, but they still feel comfortable talking to me about the things we don't agree on, because I don't come after, I try not to fight and argue with anybody, because it's just, you don't get anywhere. You're never going to change someone's mind. So you're better off just listening and trying to understand, and maybe they'll come to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious how those conversations go. Like, how do they end? You know, does the person follow up? You know, what is that dynamic typically like for a Vermont constituent?
Well, for me, I've had a lot of experience. I've knocked on 20,000 doors in my three terms that I've run. There have been people that slam doors in my face. One particular instance, I said, are you a Democrat or Republican? I said, I'm a Republican. Slammed the door in my face. I just walked off. She opened the door and said, I'm really sorry. I shouldn't have done that. We ended up talking for about 20 minutes. And she goes, boy, you sound like a Democrat. And I'm like, well, I'm a Vermont Republican. And I'm a little more, I try to be a little more moderate. I listen to people. We weren't going to come to terms on, so we had like a gun conversation. We weren't going to ever agree on that. But we agreed on mental health services and other things that we could. And it was very, like, she likes everything on my social media, and now she votes for me. I haven't got to the point where she's put my sign in her lawn yet, but So it's like, those are the things, like, you're not in there to fight people. You're like, hey, I'm here to listen. Like, what do you want?
And for me, like, it was really important for me to hit the ground running by having regular constituent coffee hours and meetings. I love knocking doors, but I also want to have like intentional time set up for community to come together. And so every month I have a constituent coffee hour in my community and I move around, I change the time, I change the location just to make it more accessible to different people. And that's huge. And it's not a lot of me talking. When I am there, mm-hmm. I am not like, let me tell you all about my views. It's me checking in with people and saying, how are you feeling? Like, how is it going with your soul? How is it going with your family? How's it going in your workplace? And then I take that information back and put it to, you know, policy.
And I try to stay away from national issues. I stay away from the national political conversations because it's not really helpful. We don't have a say in what happens at a federal level. We're here to represent our constituents in Vermont and what affects Vermonters. So listen and stay away from the heated issues that are really going to get people worked up and hate you.
Yeah, I think that's really important, honestly, especially like at the level, the state level, because I think people also need to kind of like be reminded that there is effective governing happening and like it's local to you and it's accessible to you and it doesn't have to be like what you see on these mainstream news channels and the divisiveness at the national level. So I think that is such a good tip. Well, we want to talk a little bit too about some of the legislative accomplishments that have come from this bipartisanship. So what's the list? What are some of the favorites?
What is the list? A lot of our bills actually have like tripartisan support. As far as individually, every single bill that I put in is that tripartisan support. I'm new as a chair of the Future Caucus. What, a month ago I was appointed, something like that?
Yeah.
So
a month and a half.
And I'm new here, but I will say the bills that we're looking forward to are centered around criminal justice reform. Our banner bill is looking at decreasing incarceration time for those who pursue higher education while they're incarcerated. So that's one that I'm really excited about. We already have tripartisan support. We have the support of the chair of corrections and institutions, and I'm really hopeful that it will cross the finish line this session.
Yeah.
And that's one we actually borrowed from Colorado's Future Caucus. While we were at Future Summit, I sat there and I was like jabbing Casey and my other colleague. And I was like, we should do that. And they're like, yeah, we should do that. So I drafted the bill while we were sitting in Future Summit in real time. I was messaging legislative council like, hey, we should do this in Vermont. And yeah, so I'm really excited to see where that goes.
Yeah. And there's not a lot of bills that we're going to do as Future Caucus this year, but there are a lot
like
of bills
as
like a
bill.
Banner one. Yeah. Yeah. We have a lot of bills that we've signed on together and are working together to try
and
to get
we possible. Use Future Caucus time to share about that. So like in December before we came back or November before the holiday, we had a Zoom call and we're just like, what is everyone thinking? Let's just have time to talk about our bills. And it was really interesting. There are people who were talking about like animal rights bills that I hadn't even thought about that, like banning, what is it like for cosmetics and stuff like that, like banning animal testing for products, just like things that I had never thought of or Casey had never thought of that were like, oh yeah, we're all on board for this. And so just again, having that time where we are able to talk about our ideas and our bills has been helpful. So,
and we like come to each other for any kind of bill that we may have, like, are you interested? And we'll sign on for it. But we also, you know, we do, I think the goal of the legislature, we have a lot of issues out there. And I think, you know, housing and
Childcare.
These are big issues that are affecting young Vermonters. Mm-hmm. Prices of houses, rental rates, everything's skyrocketing in Vermont. You would think we lived in DC or something with the way that our housing market is. But like, these are things that we need to worry about and we're working together. And I think you're going to see tripartisan support on a few bills, regardless of the efforts of the Future Caucus, even though we will be able to talk about it in our space.
Totally. I think that was one of the things that I really learned from being at the Rising Star Awards and talking to, you know, representatives across the country, is everyone's big issue was housing. Like I asked, like, what's the number one issue impacting y'all right now? And it was housing, and a side of housing. And I'm curious, maybe from a Future Caucus standpoint, but also like what you guys are thinking, looking at Vermont and sort of figuring that out. Like, what are some of the solutions that have come to the table? What are ones you're considering? And also too, like, are there any that just nixed? Like, good thought, bad execution, not happening.
I'm going to talk about last year, the bill that went through, the housing omnibus bill. I mean, we're not on housing committee and we're both on education committee. So when you're in the state house, you spend like 8 hours of your day in your committee and then you come to the floor and like listen to what else is going on. So we're not on housing committee, but one of the things that I know housing committee took up and they're continuing to look at is zoning in the state of Vermont. We have something called Act 250, yeah. which with the best of intentions was put in place to preserve the natural beauty of the state, but it's also making it really difficult to build in Vermont right now. And our state is growing and like wants to continue to grow in order to be viable. And so we're looking at like, how do we still preserve the natural beauty of this state and our wonderful environment while also accommodating people to live here and thrive. And so that's something that we're working on. It's tricky, right? Yeah. Because like, I care a lot about the environment. I want to make sure that our forests and our trees and our waters are all protected and safe. But I also like, I mean, I'm living in a 600 and something square foot condo right now. And I'm actually going to have to continue to live there for the next couple of years if I get reelected, fingers crossed, because there is no other housing option for me. So I've outgrown my space. I have one closet, which is a problem. I love clothes and I know, I don't know how I'm doing it, but I'm stuck there because there's no other housing in Burlington. Even if I had a bazillion dollars, which I don't, there's no housing.
And that's really tough. Like in my area, we can't find good professionals to move to town because they don't have a house to move into or even rent.
Yeah.
And I work at a car dealership in my, you know, that's my professional life. And I have people that work for me or with me. They can't afford to buy a house right now and they're making really good money, but they can't afford with the interest rates and the availability. They just
there's no availability.
So we need to figure out a way to design. And I've spent 5 years on our planning commission in St. Albans Town, and that's what we were focusing on. And how can we preserve land, develop the land properly? Because we were very, you know, we have a lot of different laws here in Vermont that preserve the land. What's the one where you can like preserve the land you buy? Anyway, you can.
The homestead tax?
There's one where you can sell like a farm can sell their land to the state and it can never be developed. But we're looking at ways to revolutionize that. Like
land trust.
Putting in land trust. And like some of the ways we were doing that is put the farm in land trust, but allow the land at a certain point where it's connected to the road or to the utilities, allow that to be developed and then conserve the rest of the land around it. Because we'd have like roads with one house on it that were in land trust. And like, we're not going to maintain those roads. It doesn't make sense for the town to maintain a road for one house, allow it to build. So we're working that at the local level. And as the state level, we're trying to help those municipalities. And there are a lot of municipalities that just they don't have the people that are working for them. They don't have the capacity to look at what kind of grants they can get or how to work the stuff. So we're really trying to work with small towns and even our bigger cities on how to develop properly.
And smarter. In a responsible way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. Well, fingers crossed. I have tons of friends that want to move to Vermont and currently can't because there's nothing to buy. Well, so that's a little motivation.
My bachelorette condo will be open sometime.
Perfect.
There's nowhere for me to move.
That leads me to the question I've been itching to ask this entire recording, which is about your recent engagement within the last, hour?
Yeah.
Please tell us. She pops on and she tells us that she just got engaged or proposed to on the house floor.
Yeah.
On the balcony.
Yeah, in the balcony.
Even cuter.
Cute.
Yeah.
Please tell us the story.
So I knew that on Safe Beyonce was going to come today and I was planning to introduce him. Our first date was actually at the State House for something called Farmers Night, which is a free concert series every Wednesday night open to the public. And yeah, he was coming today. He goes to Dartmouth, but he doesn't start school until next week. And he was in the area and I had a little write-up planned to introduce him. And yeah, when he got here, he said, "Can we go to the floor now?" I was like, "Yeah, I can show you where to sit." And we went up to the balcony, which is where we sat for our first date for that Farmer's Night concert. And he just straight up proposed in the balcony before we gaveled in for this morning's events or whatever. Oh, so I had a write-up about him, but I had to quickly add another paragraph that was like, in addition.
Yeah, that one wasn't.
No,
I was
feverishly writing.
You got the standing ovation first, so it was able to.
Yes. The whole house gave a standing ovation and there were Republicans and Democrats crying. It was like, You didn't cry. Oh my God. There were a lot of people crying.
It's like, okay if you cried.
But yes. So rumor has it, it was the first proposal in the state house, in the house.
Couple first today. Wow.
Yeah. Oh, you're the first on the podcast. Mm-hmm. And I'm the first to get engaged in the house.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah. Wow. We love congratulations. First. That is iconic.
Yeah.
I love that.
So is the wedding also going to be in the state house?
No. We did joke. Like I told the Speaker of the House before it happened, because I made another announcement yesterday and like I rarely get up and talk that much. And so I flagged her. I was like, I don't want you to think I'm the announcement queen of 2024, but I do have a guest coming. And she was like, oh, it's fine. And then I ran over to her. I was like, okay, the announcement has dramatically changed. I thought I was just introducing him and like talking about his incredible like military service, and he's a jazz musician and sang in New Orleans, like all this cool stuff about him. I was like, no, I'm talking about the fact that he just proposed in the balcony. And our Speaker of the House was like, you should just do the wedding here. Like, just do it today. It's a joke. Like, it's fine.
Just yeah. Do it today.
Yeah, we're going to wait till summer for that. And it will not be in the state house, but.
We're all invited.
If you want to come, we're eloping. So if you can fit your way into a suitcase.
I love it so much.
Absolutely. Well, absolutely iconic. First of all, we've got a Republican on the pod for the first time. Second to that engagement, third to that bipartisanship. I mean, this is truly the package of packages. So couldn't be happier to have you guys on and, you know, talk about all of these different things. And as we wrap, curious where people can stay in touch with you guys, can follow along, give us the plug.
Yeah. Well, we're both very active on our social media, which Casey already brought up earlier. I am most active on my Instagram, which, as I say, I'm most active. I never look at my handle because it's, you know, I'm already logged in. It's Stone4VT. That's where you can find me. And I try every single day to upload stories in real time. So if you want to see what it's like to be a legislator, follow me because I'll bring you along every single day.
Love it.
Love that. Is there going to be engagement videos or anything?
Yeah. So actually, my fiance just texted me and he's like, will you let me know before you post? Because he knows that I will be posting. So if you follow along, there will be pictures and stories today.
I can't wait.
Mine is, this is just to show you I'm the older millennial. Mine is my old AOL instant messenger.
I love it.
Toofy26 is both my Twitter and my Instagram because it's a shout out to my old age.
A shout out
to my old age. Yeah.
I love it. That's iconic. Well, thank you guys both so much for coming on. Great conversation and so many firsts, so many things to celebrate. So thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Hey guys, popping in with a reminder to sign up for the GovHub newsletter. This weekly pop of politics is designed to share action items, resources, and quick links to civic engagement tools and topics directly to your inbox. Save it, share it, and sign up for a pinch of productive politics today by going to girlonthegov.com or visiting this episode's description.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.